This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Former U.S. President Donald Trump says he has been indicted for allegedly mishandling classified documents. VOA's Steve Miller has more.
Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform, quote, "The corrupt Biden administration has informed my attorneys I have been indicted, seemingly over the boxes hoax," end quote. The Justice Department had no immediate comment or confirmation. In a sworn statement to a federal court last year, an FBI agent said there was probable cause to believe several crimes were committed. The U.S. Justice Department has been investigating whether Trump mishandled classified documents he retained after leaving the White House in 2021. Steve Miller, VOA News.
Ukraine's ambassador to the United Nations said Russian shelling wounded several people in the southern Ukrainian city of Kherson. We have more on that story from VOA's Jeff Custer.
Speaking to reporters at UN headquarters in New York, Ambassador Sergei Kislytsia said local authorities reported at least 9 people, including police, medical, and rescue personnel, were wounded Thursday during Russian shelling that came during an evacuation operation. He expressed his profound concern about the reported attack.
"We strongly condemn shellings of evacuation areas and call on the Russian Federation to cease such attacks and allow the evacuation teams to safely help the affected civilian population."
The ambassador also called on Russia to allow United Nations and International Red Cross workers into the Russian-controlled left bank of the Dnipro River to help affected local residents. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
French authorities are still investigating why a man stabbed 4 children, 2 adults at a lakeside park in the French Alps Thursday in an attack the French President Emmanuel Macron said has shocked the country. All 4 children suffered life-threatening wounds. The 31-year-old suspect has been taken into custody. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Following talks Thursday at the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden and British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak held joint news conference where, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine at the top of their agenda, both pledged to support Ukraine as long as it takes. In his comments, President Biden credited the British leader for his leadership in supporting Ukraine.
"The UK and the United States, together with more than 50 partners, have committed historic levels of security assistance to Ukraine. And I want to thank the Prime Minister for his strong, strong leadership, contributing significant amounts of security assistance and training Ukrainian troops so they can effectively use the equipment and ammunition we've collectively provided them."
President Joe Biden, Sunak said it was important for allies to maintain a united front to send a message to Russia. Poor air quality from the Canadian wildfires is affecting people as far away as the U.S. state of North Carolina. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
What the West Coast has been dealing with for years is an East Coast thing this week. Justin Mankin is a climate scientist at Dartmouth College.
"It's actually depositing, you know, particulate matter at the surface, in people's lungs, you know, and kind of generating the health burden that to date has been endured by the Western U.S.
And he sees a link to global warming.
"We haven't had major wildfires in the Eastern United States, and I think global warming, you know, really just primes the conditions for those types of fires to occur."
I'm Shelley Adler.
The leading suspect in the 2005 disappearance of Natalie Holloway is now here in the U.S., arriving from Peru to face charges that he tried to extort money from the missing teen's mother. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has the story.
Joran van der Sloot was flown to a jail in Birmingham, Alabama, scheduled to be arraigned in the morning for allegedly asking the mother of Natalie Holloway for $250,000 for her to learn where her daughter's body was left after she disappeared on a class trip to Aruba. Holloway's mother says she's overcome with mixed emotions. Van der Sloot is facing charges of extortion and wire fraud. This flight to the U.S. comes about a month after an extradition agreement was reached with Peru. He's jailed there after confessing to killing a Peruvian woman in 2010, 5 years to the day after Holloway's disappearance. She's presumed dead, but her remains were never found. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And the U.S. government says it's suspending food aid to Ethiopia after finding that food supplies are being diverted from the people in need. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 9th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces say they have captured the country's biggest ammunition depot in Khartoum.
RSF controlling 90% of Khartoum, and maybe today after they controlling the military industrialization is almost like 95%.
Uganda plans to accept over 1,000 refugees from Kenya. Namibia's prime minister introduces a bill in parliament not to recognize same-sex marriages that took place outside the country. ECOWAS congratulates Guinea-Bissau's opposition coalition for winning a majority of seats in last Sunday's parliamentary elections.
The victory of the opposition, it is just a victory of democracy. We are congratulating the opposition for winning. We also congratulate the ruling party that has been defeated for accepting the defeat.
And environmental activists call for an end to illegal fishing practices to save Mediterranean marine environment. Those stories plus Samse Umale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, announced that their forces captured the country's biggest ammunition depot in Khartoum on Wednesday. RSF political advisor Youssef Izzat confirmed to VOA that forces loyal to General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo captured the Yarmouk military factory for ammunition in Sudan. Izzat said the Sudan armed forces are desperately trying to consolidate their positions in and around the capital Khartoum for future negotiations. He spoke with viewers John Tanza via a messaging application from an undisclosed location.
RSF controlling 90% of Khartoum, and maybe today after they controlling the military industrialization is almost like 95%. That's the current situation on the ground.
I was watching a video of RSF saying that they are in charge of Yarmouk. What is the importance of Yarmouk?
This is the biggest factory for bullet, for weapons, and also the biggest storage for SAF in Khartoum. This is the strategic storage for SAF, from weapons, from bullets, from all equipment.
So with this situation where you're telling me that RSF is control of strategic sites around Khartoum, how does that impact on the talks in Jeddah?
SAF, they trying to get some power in the table of the negotiation. They don't want to continue in the talks until they get some strategic places in Khartoum back. And that's how why they pumping, the why they attacking by air force. But that's why they left the negotiation table, because they want better situation in Khartoum before they come to the negotiation. You know that.
Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations spoke to Al Hurra, which is our sister network. And he told Al Hurra that Sudan government is willing to negotiate, but they cannot negotiate in the backdrop of a situation where they are being attacked left and right. And they are saying RSF is not interested in any peaceful settlement. How do you react to that?
There is no negotiation between something called government. There is no involvement for any kind of Ministry of Foreign Affairs or those who are diplomatic in New York. There is no negotiation with them. And those who want to continue war, because they are from old regime, and they want to come back to the power, and they want RSF to sit with them as a government and RSF as rebels, and that will never happen.
Let's talk about the civilians who are in Khartoum. I mean, the situation that...
Yes.
Hearing from aid agencies in Khartoum, it's desperate. There are people who have been trapped for quite a long time. There are people who are sick, who don't get medicine. There are people who have no water, who have no food.
RSF is trying to help people in the ground, RSF distributing some food, but that's why we came to Jeddah. The first thing in Jeddah was the humanitarian issue, and we're looking for aid, and we're looking to open the airports and the ports and everywhere for the aid. That's the reason for Jeddah negotiation. You know, my friend, this is war. A war means that the civilian will suffering, and that's what happened in Khartoum. And those who started the war, Al-Burhan and his supporters from the Islamists, they knew that what is going to happen in Khartoum when they started the war. So they are responsible for all this happening in Khartoum.
The Sudanese who have been speaking are also saying that RSF is embedded within residential areas.
No, that's totally not true. RSF controlling all Khartoum. That means the south base, the schools, and everywhere. Why they go to the residential house to hide from what? That's all all is war propaganda. It's not true, my.
RSF political advisor Yusuf Izzat spoke with viewers John Tanza via a messaging application from an undisclosed location. The United States Agency for International Development, USAID, suspended food aid to Ethiopia on Thursday, citing a widespread and coordinated campaign to divert donated supplies from the needy. The decision will affect millions of Ethiopians facing severe food shortages due to a devastating war in the northern region of Tigray, as well as punishing drought in the south and southeast that has also struck Somalia and parts of Kenya. It comes on the heels of an announcement by USAID and the World Food Program last month to freeze food aid to Tigray after the agencies discovered that shipments were being diverted to local markets. Neither USAID nor WFP have identified those responsible for taking the aid and reselling it. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Thursday he welcomed the Ethiopian government's commitment to work together to conduct a full investigation into the diversion of U.S. food assistance and to hold accountable those found responsible. Uganda and the United Nations High Commission for Refugees are working to return refugees who had crossed into Kenya back to refugee camps in Uganda. Of the expected 1,607 refugees, 300 have already crossed into Uganda from Kenya. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The majority of refugees, women and children, left Ugandan settlements in search of better facilities in Kenya. Most of the refugees came originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo. But the United Nations High Commission for Refugees says Kenyan authorities have rejected them because they are coping with an increasing number of migrants. The first batch of 300 refugees arrived on Tuesday. Their status was re-verified before they were admitted back in refugee settlements. The next batch is expected over the weekend. Albert Amula is the Deputy Resident District Commissioner of Uganda's Tororo District, the transit center for the returning refugees.
They had left the country because of a number of reasons, ranging from food rationing by the World Food Program. They thought that in Kenya there is a higher rationing of food than in Uganda. But these refugees were registered in Uganda, and the international law does not allow Kenya again to register them. That's why the Kenyan government, working together with our Ugandan government, managed to agree that to hand over these refugees back to Uganda. And what the Office of the Prime Minister is doing is to move them from the Kenyan border in Malaba up to the refugee resettlement centers.
Amula has appealed to Ugandans and other refugees in settlements to welcome the returning refugees and to refrain from stigmatizing them. They are to be taken to settlements of Chaka, Nachivale, and Palorinya to join fellow refugees from the DRC. Uganda currently hosts more than 1.5 million refugees and asylum seekers. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, June 9. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has congratulated the opposition coalition in Guinea-Bissau for winning last Sunday's parliamentary elections. ECOWAS also praised the ruling party of President Umaro Sissoco Embalo for gracefully accepting defeat. This after the National Electoral Commission announced on Thursday that the five-party opposition coalition won 54 of the 102 seats in parliament. The ruling Madam G15 came in second with 29 seats. Serene Mamadou Kar is the acting head of the Elections Assistance Division of ECOWAS. He tells me that the success of the Guinea-Bissau election is the culmination of ECOWAS's efforts to promote democracy in the sub-region.
ECOWAS feels like this is a victory of democracy. ECOWAS has not been only observing, but also supporting the electoral process in various means. ECOWAS provided financial support. ECOWAS provided technical support. ECOWAS also provided logistical support. So the victory of the opposition, it is just a victory of democracy. It was not maybe expected, but so it turned out. We are congratulating the opposition for winning. We also congratulate the ruling party that has been defeated for accepting the defeat. It was magnanimous of them, really, to accept the defeat. And we congratulate the population also for turning out in large numbers.
So I know you already said this is important for ECOWAS, but what do you think the results mean in terms of ECOWAS's overall effort to promote democracy in the sub-region?
Well, it's just a culmination of ECOWAS's efforts in the member states within the sub-region. ECOWAS has been promoting democracy. You remember we have adopted a protocol on democracy and good governance. So it's just a feeling of satisfaction for ECOWAS that democracy is moving and that we hope other countries will also be ideals of democracy.
Well, talking about other countries, there are still a number of countries in West Africa, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali. Does ECOWAS have any specific message for these countries?
Yeah, you may recall that ECOWAS has been supporting these member states that are in transition. ECOWAS is still encouraging these member states also to return to constitutional rule. And ECOWAS has signed some agreements with all these three member states. And it is expected that within 2024, all these three member states will come back to constitutional rule. So the elections that have taken place in Guinea-Bissau may serve also as a lesson to all these member states. So far, Mali is already on the way. You know, Mali is going to organize constitutional referendum on the 18th of June, which is one major towards the return to constitutional order. So we are expecting at ECOWAS level that all these three member states also will follow suit and that democracy will come back in those countries.
We thank you so much again for the opportunity to talk with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Serene Mamadou Kao is the acting head of the Elections Assistance Division of ECOWAS. He was speaking with me from the Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. Former President Donald Trump says he has been indicted for allegedly mishandling classified documents, and he plans to surrender as requested to federal authorities in Miami on Tuesday. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman, in Washington.
For the first time in American history, a former president is facing federal criminal charges. Donald Trump, who is campaigning again for the Republican Party's presidential nomination, says he was informed Thursday of an indictment in connection with an investigation into his handling of boxes of sensitive government documents after he left the White House in 2021. In a four-minute video he posted on his Truth social media platform Thursday evening, Trump called the indictment a boxes hoax.
It's election interference at the highest level. There's never been anything like what's happened. I'm an innocent man. I'm an innocent person.
Media reports say Trump faces seven counts, including willfully retaining national defense secrets in violation of the Espionage Act, making false statements, and conspiring to obstruct justice. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Namibia's prime minister has told the National Assembly that the government will introduce a bill to parliament to not recognize same-sex marriages by Namibians and foreign nationals that took place outside the country. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek.
A Namibia Supreme Court ruling in May recognized marriages of same-sex partners performed legally outside the country. The ruling led to nationwide protests and demonstrations against the ruling. Prime Minister Sara Kogongero Amadila on Tuesday told the National Assembly the government would introduce a bill to counter the Supreme Court's decision. She said, according to Namibian law, marriage is meant to be between a man and a woman of mature age.
Given the importance of this matter, the government has decided that it will bring a bill to this House to see that Parliament modifies by an Act of Parliament in terms of Article 66 of the Constitution, the relevant common law principle, in order that same-sex marriages, even where solemnized in countries that permit such marriages, cannot be recognized in Namibia.
Legal scholar Nachiri Chirera told VOA many Namibians have misunderstood the judgment, which only allows the recognition of same-sex marriage for purposes of immigration. He said the court's judgment was made on the basis of common law, which can be overruled by an act of parliament. If the legislator enacts laws limiting marriage to only a man and a woman, then the Supreme Court ruling that recognizes LGBTQ partnerships by Namibians and foreign spouses entered into outside the country would be invalid.
That is where the controversy actually of the judgment lies. Are these people, are their marriages valid because in terms of the law in Namibia? The Supreme Court says because the common law principles allows for that, it is valid. And that is that.
The National Assembly was scheduled to debate the Supreme Court judgment on Wednesday, but the debate was postponed to next Tuesday. The member of parliament who tabled the motion for debate, Jerry Akanjo, accused the speaker of the National Assembly, Peter Kachavivi, and other members of trying to stifle the debate by removing it from the issues scheduled to be discussed on Wednesday.
And I'm reliably informed some members of parliament, including deputy ministers, went to the speaker to tell the speaker that it should be withdrawn because it is unconstitutional. How unconstitutional? If I did not even express myself.
The Supreme Court ruling has divided public opinion. The Law Society of Namibia on Wednesday issued a news release condemning what it called an attack on the judiciary by those opposed to the ruling. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Yesterday, Thursday, was UN World Oceans Day, while the fight to save the Mediterranean Sea from overfishing continues. Environmental campaigners and fishing and food agencies are calling for more selective fishing practices to save the marine environment that will not only improve stocks of fish and marine life, but will also save seagrass meadows that could be the answer to global warming. Reporter Elysia Folkman has more from Tunis.
The Mediterranean is the world's largest enclosed sea. It links Europe with the Middle East and North Africa. It is also the most overfished sea in the world. But the fight is on to balance the Europeans' love of eating seafood with preserving its unique marine wildlife and the communities of people whose living depends on it. Fishing agencies, General Fisheries Commission for the Mediterranean, GFCM, of the Food and Agriculture Organization, have launched a pilot project to encourage more selective fishing practices so that fish that are not fully grown are not caught and discarded. This will preserve fish stocks for the future. However, an alliance of environmental organizations say that one of the biggest risks to the health of the Mediterranean Sea is a practice called kiss trawling that is being practiced off the Kerkena Islands and the Gulf of Gabes in the south of Tunisia. Italy and Spain are the biggest consumers of Tunisia's catch of fish, including delicacies such as octopus, squid and prawns. With such high demand for seafood, the kiss trawling style of bottom dredging fishing is on the rise, causing severe damage to the marine habitat of the Gulf of Gabes.
Kiss trawling is a form of illegal fishing which is highly destructive. Vessels drag weighted nets along the seafloor in very shallow waters, catching pretty much everything in their path and destroying irreplaceable habitats of seagrass meadows. These are essential nurseries for marine wildlife in the Mediterranean, including endangered species of sharks, marine turtles, and key commercial species. The seagrass is also essential for climate change mitigation and adaptation. To give you an idea, it can sequester carbon at up to 70 times the rate of tropical rainforests.
That was Amelie Giardini, ocean campaigner for the Environmental Justice Foundation, part of the MedSea Alliance, who are campaigning for a healthier Mediterranean Sea. Around the Kerkena Islands, artisanal fishers use an ancient low-impact technique of fishing called sharfia, which has been recognized by UNESCO as a global heritage. But despite this protection, they are losing their livelihoods to the kiss trawlers.
A well-managed network of marine protected areas is essential to ensuring protection of the seagrass meadows. The responsibility here is also shared with importing countries. The European Union, and in particular Italy and Spain, have to make sure that no product from kiss trawling ends up on their plates.
The battle to save Tunisia's section of the Mediterranean Sea isn't just being fought by big campaigning organizations, but by grassroots local associations who continually monitor its coastlines. Kerkina's Young Scientists Association are engaging members of the public to monitor turtle populations using a smartphone app called eTurtle. The crisis of overfishing in the Mediterranean may not be over, but projects such as the Sicilian Selective Trawling Project show that there is the possibility for environmentalists and commercial fishers to work together. What they all agree on is that governments need to be as vigilant and committed as those who live and work on the Mediterranean coast. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Folkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Umale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the CAF draws for the FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup, which was conducted at the CAF headquarters in Cairo on Thursday. The first round pits the Central African Republic against Mauritius in September. The winning team of this clash will play against Nigeria in the second round. An exciting clash is also on the cards between Morocco and Burkina Faso, while Uganda versus Cameroon as well as Burundi against Botswana are also expected to up some exciting youth women's football in the next few months. In the second round, matches are expected to take place between the 2nd and 4th of February, with the return fixtures set for the 9th to the 11th of February 2024. And now to the CAF Champions League. Morocco's Wydad Athletic Club will host Egypt's Al Ahly in the return fixture of the CAF Champions League final this weekend. Wydad is carrying a 2-1 deficit from the first leg played in Cairo last weekend and will be hoping in the least for a 1-0 victory on home turf to turn the tie in their favour. A total of 45,000 tickets were released for the match and they ran out in record time, a clear manifestation of how important this tie is. Staying with football news, Bafana coach Hugo Bruce finally unveiled the final list of players he will send out to represent South Africa in the mouth-watering 2023 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against World Cup semi-finalist Morocco this month. Bruce's Chargers, who have already qualified for the AFCON finals in Ivory Coast next year, will take on the Atlas Lions next week Saturday at the FNB Stadium. The Belgian coach announced a preliminary 34-member Bafana squad last month and has now trimmed the list to his final 23 players.
This is a big game. If you do a good performance, if the team does a good performance, if you have a positive a result, it's also good for you as a player. So you have to know that those games are seen by many people because it's an interesting game. It's interesting to see the guys of Morocco, but also that has to be enough as a motivation for a player.
In cricket news, the Nigerian Cricket Federation has announced a 14-player squad for the 9th edition of the Kwibuka T20 Women's Tournament in Rwanda. Musa Ehisoje, the Federation's public relations officer, said the team will leave the country on Friday. The Nigerian team are scheduled to begin their campaign in the tournament on Saturday against the host country, Rwanda. In beach badminton news, 8 countries will take part in the badminton tournament at the African Beach Games scheduled for June 23rd to the 30th in Hammamet, Tunisia. The countries that have already qualified and confirmed their participation are Algeria, South Africa, Equatorial Guinea, Mauritius, Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Benin, and Tunisia. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.